This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on Horse Radio Network for June 9th, episode 1447. Today's show is brought to you by Horsewear. Good morning, Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Well, thank you for joining us on this Thursday morning. Actually, this is Mary and I's second show we're doing together this week. It's our second time hanging out. We also, Mary,
double dose.
Yeah, she filled in for Helena over on the Stable Scoop show. That'll come out today, actually. So you'll get to hear Mary over there. She helped out. Thank you so much for doing that, Mary.
No problem. Get to hear me get lectured on my health, which is always nice.
We had a little fun at Mary's expense, let's just say. But that was a fun show, and we have had a wonderful listener on. Should be a lot of fun there, too. Well, we have a lot of things planned for you today. Unfortunately, Jennifer's dealing with a technological problem right now. So we hope that she joins us here in a little bit. And we hope that we can actually call our guests, because that's what she's dealing with. We have a little issue with the call-in center right now, but she's working on that. So we'll talk about what's coming up on today's show. We have a bunch of listener questions again. It's kind of become a thing on your episode to answer listener questions because you're so good at it.
Good ones. I wasn't expecting any, and we got really, really good ones.
We did, and a lot of them. You know, what I can tell by this is that our listeners have a lot of questions about riding horses. I was thinking about your intro where you said in that intro that you never learn it all and you're always learning. It's not like playing video games where you can get to the end and you're done, right? You're never done learning about riding horses.
Well, I hope people don't hear that intro and think, oh God, why bother? But for me, it's exciting, you know, to know that I'm never going to get to the end of it and then be bored and
But for type A people, drives you nuts.
Because, yes, and you know, I'm not.
You have to have a conclusion, you know, there's to be.
No, I want a surprise around every corner. And I always say that, you know, some of the most masterful horsemen have gone to their grave and said, you know, five more years, and I would have had it. And again, you know, I don't want people to think that's hopeless. I want you to think, not only is it awesome that you're always going to learn something new every day, but there is no one in this world who has a mastered it all. And if they say they have, they're lying. So, you know, all the professionals that we look up to, there's a reason we look up
Ray
to
Hunt
them.
Ray Hunt would never have said that. Would never say that.
No. No.
And Monty, look at him. He's out at 80 doing as many clinics as he was doing at 30, right?
What? Jack Brainerd's like 94 and he's still talking about, you know, the next DVD he's going to do or book he's going to write and he's still riding.
Yep. Very cool. Well, we have those listener questions for you. And then we have one of our old friends, Dominique Ferrero from Zebras R Us, coming back to the show to talk about what's been going on in her life. We love to have her on a couple times a year because, one, she's fascinating, and two, she has some really cool critters. And she lives near you now. So you two need to meet up.
Yeah, that's why I decided to have her. We had her back on in December, talked a little bit about zebras, but I found out that she lives really close to me. And so we were sharing very charming East Texas stories that you only understand if you're from East Texas. So perhaps we can share some insight.
A little
into
redneckish,
this.
Maybe.
Redneck is not even the right term.
What's beyond redneck?
It's like sort of stepping through a portal into an alternate universe. where things are kind of similar, but not quite right. That's a pretty good representation. So we swapped some stories, and she's gotten a little bit of Texas culture shock. So I'd love to hear how she feels about that. And so that'll be a good one.
All right, very good. And then also we have David how do you say his name? Landerville?
I say Landerville, and we'll have to have him clarify because I don't think he's told me his last name over the phone yet.
And what's he talking about?
He is a barefoot practitioner. I believe he's a student of Pete Ramey, who is an expert in the field. I've got him coming out later this month to work on my horse Guthrie. And so there's a lot of interesting information there, not only on how a barefoot trim differs than maybe your typical trim, and how a horse's diet and environment might also affect his foot health. So that'll be some interesting discussion there.
All right, that all is coming up on today's show, and we are going to get started with busting your chops a little bit because I haven't had enough of that this week.
Again? Yeah.
Well, you set yourself up for this one. Yesterday, if you go to Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship, you're going to see a video, and I thought you were resharing this video, that this was something that you just were, you know, resharing, but no. No, it's not something you're resharing. It's something that actually happened in your vehicle. So there's this cute picture of this baby donkey, of this baby zombie donkey eating McDonald's in a car. Or actually shredding McDonald's in a car.
She's throwing about a McDonald's bag. And you can't see it in the video. There's also a hamburger that was massacred, French fries everywhere. She's clearly upset that they got her order wrong.
Apparently, very upset. And oh, by the way, it might have been eating McDonald's all the time is one of the things we busted on Mary about on the Stable Scoop show. So it's appropriate that this video went up. But then I realized this was not one you were sharing from somebody else. This was your car, and this was the baby donkey in your vehicle. So I'd divorce you. I mean, that would just be it. It would be that day. I'd file the papers and walk out.
Well, okay, just so you know, in my little environment, I'm the sane one. This was actually my mom's impulse buy. So, you know, my brother has joked that a lot of people, an impulse buy would be, you know, you're at the Walmart counter and go, I think I'm going to buy that big red pack of gum, you know.
Yeah, an impulse buy is a candy bar. Yeah.
Yes.
M&M's.
My mom, in her case, she happened to be at a flea market and saw a baby donkey for sale and thought,
this is East Texas.
Let's throw that
they have
in
baby
the
donkeys
car.
At flea markets.
Oh, you don't even know. You don't even know. And she's like, yeah, let's throw the baby donkey in the car. Loaded up a red truck and went through McDonald's drive-thru, and she had a lot of opinions about that. So this is one of our new additions. Her name is Jezebel.
You mean this is one you just got?
Jerk. Just got her, like last week.
So did you give her the McDonald's or did she take the McDonald's?
She took it. That was all her. This wasn't like set up like, ooh, let's see what she'll do. She just, there was a bag sitting there and she went to town. Uh-huh. And I have other videos. I've thrown stuffed animals out with her and she picks those up and carries them around. So she's a welcome addition, I would say.
So you know, we have a nickname for baby donkeys. We call them zombie donkeys because most of them are holy terrors. So yes. Is this one a holy terror, apparently?
You know how there's two types of zombies in cinema? You've got The Walking Dead, which are kind of ambling around the classic zombies.
Right. Yeah.
And then the game changer 28 Days Later zombies where they were like a million miles an hour and frightening. She's the latter. And she can jump like 6 feet in the air. If you touch her butt, she does not appreciate that. She does the most fantastic Lipizzaner airs above the ground you've ever seen.
Well, I still would have to divorce you if you put the animals in the car. The dog's okay, but
that's not even the first time we've done that.
I believe that actually.
we've had a llama in the car. We've had baby cows in the car. It's kind of a normal thing.
Yeah, but usually animals get nervous when they get in cars, and that's what I worry about.
I have never had that problem. I remember years ago when we lived outside of St. Louis, we had a mini horse colic, and the vet we took her to was on the other side of Metro St. Louis, so we didn't feel comfortable taking a trailer. So we just loaded her up in my Jeep Wrangler, and off we went. And yeah, I've never had a problem with it, strangely enough. I think it's such a surreal thing for them. They're just like, yeah, I'm going to behave for the next hour just to let's see where this goes.
Oh, maybe for you. If they were in my car, that's the first thing they would do. All over the car. And it would be,
they would have
the runs. Right? It would be diarrhea. That's what would happen. That'd be the first
thing. Well, and this is, of course, goes without saying, don't try this at home. Probably not. That's like people, I see a ton of videos and photos of horses in houses. Now that's where I draw the line. That's just ridiculous.
Well, glad to hear there's a line somewhere with you.
Yeah. Now I've had them on the porch and in the laundry room, but in the kitchen is definitely off limits.
The only time we've ever had a horse in the house is I was really sick. I had pneumonia and I was in the hospital for a little bit and then out. And then I was on the couch for like a month. And Jennifer brought my pony into the house to see me because I was so sick. That was our first farm. But that's the only time I think we've... And that pony would go anywhere. So it didn't care if it was in the house. But it came over to the couch and said hi to me.
Aw, that's so sweet.
That's the only time that's ever happened. Let's get to some of your listener questions. Do you want to do that next?
Let's do it.
All right. We're still waiting for Jennifer to get her things ironed out. I put that video on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page if you want to see the video of the baby donkey shredding McDonald's. By the way, this is a great commercial for McDonald's. They would just love this. So much for
And
this.
Her name is Jezebel. Just
you know, you need to get McDonald's as a sponsor for your episode. You really do. Junk food queen, you really need McDonald's as your sponsor.
I've probably given them about, I don't know, a tenth of my salary over my lifetime.
There you go. Now you need to get some of it back.
I should have bought stock in McDonald's. I'm going to call my broker after this is over.
That's right. Well, let's talk. Well, let's see. What do we start with here today? Let me pick one. We had so many from our auditors. The first one is, and many people wanted to know this, is how to teach a horse to lay down. Now, you have a DVD on that, but there's different methods for teaching horses to lay down. And everybody thinks that's so cool because it would be so cool. You know, every horse girl pictures just laying down with their horse in the field, right?
Oh, yeah. That people are obsessed with that one. And I think for two reasons. One, it's super cool. Show your friends, photo op, all that. And of course, you're bonding with your horse in a new and magical way. But there's a bit of a, I don't want to call it a full-on myth because there is truth to it. There's this idea that laying a horse down creates this magical horse whisperer breakthrough that if you have a troubled horse, you can lay them down and they come up a different horse. In fact, it's a scene in The Horse Whisperer. Pilgrim, he and Grace, they don't trust each other yet and they need that one last breakthrough. So Robert Redford lays the horse down and she gets on the horse. In fact, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it right now. And the horse gets up and it's just magical. And so there is a little bit of truth to that. Teaching a horse to lay down, doing it with restraints such as a rope or something, and teaching them to go against their natural instinct to flee against danger. And if they can't run away, then they will fight. And teaching them instead to give completely, give over everything, your body and soul, and lay down. And it does make a change for a horse. However, it's not as simple as pulling him over and then you've created something great. It involves an incredible amount of feel and mastery. And even in the best of situations, and I literally do try to scare the bejesus out of people with this. When you lay a horse down with ropes, like in the Robert Redford movie, you could have the best feel and the sweetest horse and the best footing and the Everything could be perfect. You could be a master of it. Things can still go wrong. You take that risk every time you restrain your horse in that way. So I want people to understand that. This is not something you can learn at a clinic in a weekend and then go home and do. And I know plenty of people try it, and I've heard horror stories, believe me. So that said, there's a use for it. I believe in teaching a horse to give to restraints. I don't really go all the way to the lay down anymore. I will teach my horses to lead by their feet with a lariat, and that's one of the beginning steps if you do want to lay them down in that way. First, teach them just to give their feet. If I pick up your foot, will you follow the feel of that rope? Can I lead you around this round pin by your front foot? Now your other front foot. How about your back feet? And that's the first step. And then I'll teach them, okay, can I pick up your foot with the rope? And so on and so forth. So it's all a simple matter of feel and release. Can you give to all these different types of feels with that rope? Usually, to be honest with you, if I can get a horse that far, I don't really see a need to lay them, to go further and lay them down. And I haven't come across a horse in a long time that I felt, man, I really think I need to lay this horse down with a lariat. It's in my tool bag. I know how to do it. But I just haven't felt the need to go that far. So the lay down as a training method in that way, that's one way to do it, where, again, you're teaching the horse to pick up his foot, and then you teach him to put his knee on the ground and then give, you know, lay down all the way. That process is definitely more lengthy and nuanced than we can go into on a listener question. The other way is a little bit more methodical and more for teaching a horse to do it as a trick or in performance. There are some good resources out there. Tommy Turvey has a thing on it. Again, there is a lot of safety involved if you teach them the circus way. There's a lot of protocols you need to follow, where you need to position yourself by the horse, when you need to release, how often you should do it, how long you should do it, the environment you need to train in. And even then, things can happen. And that's just horse training. They can hurt themselves in any number of ways. The third way is one that I started doing with horses, and that's using positive reinforcement. And so the positive reinforcement, again, I'm using a marker signal like a click, and I usually use a food reward, something the horse is very motivated by and wants to do things to earn. And the simple matter is doing it that way. There's no restraints at all. And with this method that I do, it's the one I show on my DVD, my rules are you can choose to lay down or you don't have to. And as a horse trainer, especially you type A personalities, you might go, but I want him to, so I shouldn't give him a choice. It's like, no, actually, in some cases, in a lot of cases, if you give your horse a choice and let him think about it, a lot of times they'll do the thing you want. They naturally really do want to please you, most horses. So I just shape this with a successive approximation, meaning I start with something I know I can get, a small little change in his body position, a flick of an ear, a change in his eye, a lowering of his head, and I start saying, ooh, I like that. Do that again. I want to see more of that, and rewarding him for it. And whatever I've marked and rewarded, he's going to repeat. And I just keep building on that over time until I get the final product of that is my horse lays down in my presence, and he does so relaxed and comfortable. And he does so knowing that he didn't have to. If he doesn't do it, then I'll say, okay, well, let's do something else instead. For me, the lay down is not you have to do this. This is not a do or die thing. This isn't, to me, as important as things like you should stand tied, or you should load in the trailer when I ask, or you should let the vet investigate you. This is just, let's see what we can accomplish. And by giving them a choice, it really makes a huge difference. So those are just kind of going over a few of the ways to lay a horse down. My favorite is the final one. And to me, some folks, everyone has a different idea on this. Some folks lay a horse down at the beginning. That's their starting point. They do it to earn the horse's trust, is how they would put it. For me, I do it as an acclimation of trust. So I build trust doing, there's a million other ways you can get your horse's trust that are safer and involve less resistance. And then once I have that seed planted and I've got that horse working with me, then I'll say, okay, so we've got this trust thing going on. Can we take that a little bit further? So I've had the best, most consistent and safest results by doing it once I've taught my horse some other things and have gained his trust in other ways.
And of course, they can buy the DVD that shows them how to do it where?
They can do that at my website, MaryKitzMiller.com.
MaryKitzMiller.com is where you can get the DVD. Now let's, here's a good one. And Rachel asked this one. Is what do you do with a cross tie paw? The horse that just incessantly paws when they're on the cross ties. And I think everybody has had one of those, right? That does that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And one of the most frustrating ones, because it's kind of at the outset, it looks like it's kind of a hard fix. And a few people even commented on this. I'm going to just send this off real quick. So with the pawing of the cross ties, a few people commented and said, oh, what people normally do at my barn is the horse paws and they say, hey, stop that. Or they say, whoa, and slap him in the chest. Well, first of all, I would warn against using the word whoa as a correction.
Yeah, that's I learned that the hard way.
Yeah. Well, and especially in like with my reining horses, whoa is sort of this holy word, and you be careful how you utter it. In fact, when I'm teaching lessons, I won't just throw the word whoa out there. I'll say that word to my student, but I won't say, okay, say whoa, because the horse I'm sitting on, I don't want him to hear it and learn to just kind of block it out. Whoa means one thing, and that is put your butt in the ground and kick up some dirt and stop and get back, use yourself. Not only that, but I want my horse to hear the word whoa and go, oh, yes, I love this word. Well, if I'm using that to slap, you know, to say whoa and then whack on him, he's not going to want to hear that word, is he? So whoa
is
a
point, actually. Yeah.
Whoa is a cue I need him to hunt and crave and even enjoy, and not one I need him to hear and then wince because something bad's coming. And punishment in general, is kind of tricky. I believe in using punishment, but your timing has to be perfect and you have to use a proportionate amount. And that can be very hard to determine, even for a professional. So with horse's pawing, we look at that as the problem. The problem is my horse paws in the cross ties. It's annoying. Think of it as a symptom. Okay, why is he pawing? So it could be fear, it could be anxiety, it could be frustration, it could be boredom, it could be confusion. You need to address what's going on.
Can it ever be that he's just a jerk?
Yeah.
Okay.
It totally can.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah. I mean, he's a thinking, breathing animal like we are. And sometimes I do things because I'm being a butthead. So
yeah, and I took the late bus home from school from many a day, and there were a lot of jerks on the late bus. I'm just saying, yeah, there were just a lot of jerks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so there's a few things that you can do to address it. Typically, my answer is almost the same for any one of these random problems, like the pawing and they won't stand still when I'm trying to get on, and those kind of annoying little issues, and whacking them and yelling at them just doesn't seem to work. It's the same stuff I do in the arena in the round pen when I'm training them to ride. I get control of their feet, and it's not about, oh, you're pawing, so I'm going to take you to the round pen and run you around till you're sweaty and make you feel bad for doing it. It's about, okay, let me see how much control I can gain over your feet. And I play this game for hours. And at the standstill, I'll look at a horse's foot and say, can I pick up your right front foot and place it to the side? And how little pressure does it take for me to do that? Now, can I pick up that foot and put it back where I was? Can I pick up your left hind foot and bring it forward? Now, how about backwards? Can I get you to lean forward or side to side? Can I get you to turn your nose this way? Can I get you to push your hip that way? I do all these little body control exercises. And initially, I learned how to do these so I could teach my horse to do all the maneuvers I need him to do under saddle. But what I found as a pleasant bonus is that a lot of the other quote-unquote problems that I had with horses, you know, I won't stand still when they're tied, or won't stand still when I get on, or calling out to their buddies, or whatever, they just kind of either never happened in the first place, or they disappeared completely. So foot control is the answer to everything. So typically, if I start really getting my horse under control in that area, the pawing of the cross tie ceases. Now, I did have one horse and was one of my Road to the Horse colts that I had really good relationship with under saddle and on the ground, doing the groundwork with, but I could not get him to stop pawing when I tied him up. He would kick the walls every time. And that was the horse I had to take it a step further. And what I did with him, this is kind of timely after just having talked about the lay down, is I did some lariat work and I taught him to lead with the lariat by all 4 feet, taught him to pick up those feet, give them every which way by picking up the lariat. And then I trained him to stand in hobbles. A lot of folks, especially probably on the English side, who this is not kind of a thing for you guys, hear hobble training and go, oh my God, it's so cruel. Your horse's legs together. It is cruel if I just slap a set of hobbles on him and leave him be. It's a process. And so I teach the horse to give to restraints on his legs little by little. So by the time I buckle the hobbles, he's ready for it. I don't ever really have a horse have a big struggle in hobbles because I've prepared him. I've told him it's coming and I've taught him how to build his patience and stand still and give to restraints. So I teach him to hobble in a good, safe environment like the round pen. I teach him to stand hobbled for longer periods of time. I never just put him on the first time and leave him for an hour and go to lunch. I start with about 5 minutes and then go from there. So that horse was already well accustomed to hobbles. So I just it just became a habit. Every time I tied him up, I put hobbles on him. And it took about a week. And he stopped pawing, and then he hasn't had a problem with it since. And that was the one horse I really had to sort of go the extra mile on. And it was just something, he just developed a habit to where once they get that habit going in their brain, it's sort of hard for them to stop. So just interrupting that little neural pathway by saying, okay, I'm not allowed, you cannot paw now. So you're going to have to, be patient and grow up a little.
And Jennifer just wrote here, you know, they're seeking attention, any attention, and getting yelled at is attention, right? So,
well, and here's the scientific way to think about punishment. So you may just think you were perfect in your punishment. You really showed that horse and you did the right thing at the right time. However, if you punish a horse and the behavior repeats itself, whatever you did not punish the horse. The only way it can be considered punishment, it can be considered effective punishment, is if the behavior ceases after you've done it. If the behavior is repeating, no matter how many times you've corrected the horse, then you're not punishing the horse. In fact, the horse is probably being reinforced in some way. So it could be you're reinforcing him in some way by, like Jennifer says, giving him attention, or pawing could be a way for him to self-satisfy, you know, like cribbing or weaving. It could be he could be reinforcing himself by pawing. So this is where you have to get in your horse's head a little bit and think outside the box.
Boy, that's no different than kids with the whole punishment thing.
It's exactly the same. No different than anything with a nervous system.
There you go. And as you said with the hobbles thing, that is something you do want to know something. Don't go try it without knowing something about how to do it properly.
Yes, it's a process.
All right. Speaking about doing things properly, there's somebody that has been doing it for years and not just with horses. We've had her on the shows for a long time. We met Dominique Ferrero for the first time Wow, let me think about this. This was back when we made our trip for a week out to Norco, out to Horsetown, USA in California, and she was living out there. We got to go to her farm and see her 1,000 animals, all different kinds of animals, and they were doing a photo shoot that day. It was so cool. They must have had 20 people there with the professional cameras and stuff, and they were just trying to get literally 2 seconds of zebras running, and they filmed all day. to get like 2 or 3 seconds for a commercial of zebras running. And there was a whole crew there. They set up tents. They had trucks. It was just an incredible scene. It was fun to be there that day. We're going to talk to Dominique and get caught up with her, excuse me, on what's going on in the wild critter haven that she has there in just a minute. But first, we have to hear from our friends at Horsewear. And you know what? It's fly season, everybody, especially here in Florida.
Another long, tough fly season is right around the corner. And the only choice for this fly season are the Amigo range of fly sheets, because they're built tough and feature the latest in design comfort, bug-busting technology, and sun-protecting fabrics. And the Amigo range has a fly sheet for every budget, from the Amigo Bug Buster Vamoose with no fly zone to the Amigo Bug Rug fly sheet. Find Amigo fly sheets at your local or online retailer, or you can visit horseware.com. That's horseware, horsewear.com.
And we thank Horsewear for their continued support of the Mary Kitzmiller episode here every month. So now let's, we have to call Dom, because we lost Jennifer and our call-in studio appears to be malfunctioning, we're going to have to call her live. So you're probably going to hear the ringing when we do this. And Dominique is with ZebrasRUs.com. Longtime listeners of the show will remember Dominique. She comes on many times. Was on last with you, Mary, right, in December?
Yep.
Hello?
Hey, Dominique, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
All right. You're on the air with Mary and I. It's good to have you back.
Same here. Good to talk to you.
So, we had you on last in December, and we're talking with you yesterday. We've talked in the past. I was just telling everyone about the certain magic of East Texas that's kind of hard to explain. So you're a transplant from California. Is this what you were thinking Texas would be like coming over here?
Well, I've traveled so much in the past and I've spent a lot of time out here and I've been to different countries, and I'll tell you what, I got to choose where I wanted to be, and this is where I chose, and I absolutely love it.
Oh, good, good. That's always nice to hear. And, you know, this is kind of different. Texas, obviously, is huge, and there's so much going on here, and a lot of stuff you see in the movies. But East Texas, a lot of people don't realize how kind of green and rolling hills and a lot of evergreens there are out here. Not a bad place to raise zebras, I think.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. I mean, when you think of Texas, typically you think of the cowboy out in the... It's a little dry and cactus and big rattlesnakes, and Texas is so large. West Texas is definitely like that, but East Texas is just beautiful, and it's nice. It's pretty. We got ourselves a little bit of land, so I don't have the neighbor problems you do. Oh, you're on the other side of the track. But it's a great place. I mean, it's real nice to raise animals. Like I said, I got to choose, which is real nice. I got to choose where I wanted to be location-wise, and this is it. And I couldn't ask for anything more. You know, it's just, it's real nice. The animals are doing good, and it's just, it's real pretty. I mean, it's a really nice place to raise animals, but there are some things that I need to learn, and it's very, very difficult to move animals, I feel, across the country. And they either don't do well or they do well.
Especially so exotics, people, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah. And in California, I had my recipe and things looked wonderful. It was great. It was easy. It was familiar. And moving out here has been so different. And, you know, the feed changes and climate changes have taken a huge effect on all of our animals here. I mean, we've got zebras, camels, water buffalo, horses, and finding the correct recipe all over again has been kind of tough. So, you know, that's definitely something to think about if you ever relocate, is your feed program. It's very, very different. And I feel, you know, research-wise, I thought I did, you know, A, B, C, D, crossed my T's, dotted my I's. There's feed stores on, you know, a lot of the corners, and you pick up feed and you buy it, but it's not like that. And I definitely would have researched more about feed and how to do it and, you know, things like that, because it's just, it's so different. You know, I asked, is there alfalfa out here? Oh, yeah. You know, yeah.
The guys, don't buy the Texas alfalfa, which I'm sure you've
right?
heard. Or Oklahoma
right.
or Kansas. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And this is something I think as a horse owner, any kind of animal owner, is really look into what you're doing. You know, like I said, the location, I couldn't beat the location. It's beautiful. I'm having a guy come over and mow my hay meadow that has no nutritional value in it, you know?
Texas and the alfalfa. Coastal hay, yes.
Yeah, we have that same hay here in Florida. It's basically cardboard. Yeah,
it's something else. I mean, it's unreal. It's unreal.
I have a funny story about that. So coastal hay, for those of you who don't know, you know, or the kind of hay you get in Texas and Oklahoma, it's drought resistant. Because as you may know, we've had some drought in the past, and it's really it's filler for the most part. It's not bad. It's not bad stuff, but there's just not a whole lot to it. And when I drove to California with my hay in my truck bed for a horse event, they stop you at a checkpoint, and the guy actually went through my hay. And he goes, "You feed this to your horses?" It's like, "Well, yeah." He goes, "We wouldn't feed this here." I'm like, "Oh, well, I guess in California." And it is hard to find different varieties of grass in Texas, like Orchard, and I don't, you know, Timothy is harder to come by. And yes, you can get get tons of alfalfa in Texas. And for those of you who are thinking of relocating to one of the states that, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, be on top of where your alfalfa comes from, and don't trust them if they say, "Absolutely. Oh yeah, it came because of blister beetles." And I'm sure you've heard about that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It seems, it's definitely a good old boys state. I absolutely love it. But it's definitely old Blackie out there has been eating it for 10 years, and Blackie's fine. It ain't never hurt any of my ponies or cattle. You know, they eat it right up. And so that whole deal, Blackie is, you know, the old survival horse. And I feel, you know, in California and different parts of the country, we have big fluffy pets. And out here, it's more a horse is in a pasture. And he lives there, and, you know, he might have 3 out of 4 legs have barbed wire cuts, and he's a little rough around the edges, but he works.
Yeah. Well, especially in this part of Texas, you do have the pockets of people like you and I, who these are our babies, and we take our donkeys through McDonald's drive-thrus. But for the most part, I've seen the running of horses around here very similar to cattle.
Well, they're livestock, right?
Well, yeah. I'll deworm him when he looks ribby, and I'll trim him if we've had a lot of rain and his feet are 8 inches long. Okay, well, maybe I ought to get the farrier out for the first time in 8 years. And I mean, it's not that it's not that they're all neglected. They're cared for. They're on good grass. But it's very different. And there is even as much research as you can do when you move to a new place. And I went through this. I'm pretty new here too, considering I moved here in about 2010. You've got to get your resources in order, finding the right vet, the right farrier, finding a dentist, and finding a good source for your feed and what to feed. And here's another thing that I'm sure you've probably dealt with, especially when you're moving animals from one climate, one region to the next, is you're going to find in a new place different types of bacteria and sickness the horses can get. So that'll be something that, especially if your horse is used to a different climate. I've had people that move from a drier climate to more humid, and now they're dealing with things like scratches, what they've never had to deal with before.
Yeah, we're in that boat. Yeah.
And and their immune system is going to go through some craziness, in the move too, and different weathers, what's more likely to make the horse colic? How should I adjust my feed program? So it's definitely a learning curve.
It's something else. We had to move. I was in California. Then the property in Texas wasn't ready yet. So I relocated for 8 months up to Oklahoma, north on the border of Kansas. I mean, it was right there. And so it was a move from California to Kansas, Oklahoma area, and then down south, to Texas. And so my poor little critters have been through all kinds of ups and downs. The other thing we take for granted is bugs, flies. Oh,
they never died this year.
Oh, no. I have given my horse edema on the belly. He looks like a walking smallpox victim. I am learning new fly sprays, what works, what doesn't. Oh, that burns their skin. Don't overdo it.
Yes.
So it's definitely been a challenge, and I wish we could all get together and help, cause it's so different, and people are so nice, but it's just uncharted territory for a newbie coming in to this area or any area, definitely get with a really good, I would call a performance barn. If you're moving somewhere out of state that was unfamiliar, get with somebody very knowledgeable, call a vet, sit down, ask for a consultation, talk to them, and prevent the problems before they happen, because my poor horse would appreciate it. I know that.
Well, Dominic, I have a couple things to ask you to talk about. Uh-huh. First is you need to work on your Southern accent, because you're Texas. It's not there yet. You need to
keep... I can't even text y'all. I can't do it. I've texted, but I can't do it. I'm like, I can't press send. And I need to eliminate guys out of my vocabulary, I guess.
Yeah, that's very California. You need to get rid of that. The second thing is, you were doing a lot of movie work when you were... you were right outside of LA, so that made sense. Are you still doing movie work, or has that become more difficult now that you're in Texas?
You know what? I'll tell you something. This is a beautiful, sometimes you get on the path you're meant to be on. And I've been extremely blessed and thankful for so many good, influential people in my life. But when you do a good job, it doesn't go unnoticed. And I did a lot of work in the entertainment industry in LA. And now that I'm out in Texas, I will tell you, I've been on more A-list movies and done a lot more work that's of higher value. It's all great to work in the industry. But I'll tell you what, I've done so much, I can't even post it on the internet yet.
I was going to ask you, what can we look for one of your animals?
Mary's a big movie person. She loves
movies.
Oh, I'm such
a huge movie buff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't disclose them. There's a lot of them. There's 5 big ones that they will definitely be out there. And I've actually got a major part in some of them. But they're huge. Yeah. And I'm going to California this weekend for a big job coming up. And so I'm not doing the little stuff, which is always fun and a very good start.
Because you were doing a lot of commercials and things like that, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we say you, we really mean your pets, right? Or are you actually going to be in some of these?
Well, these ones now I am actually in.
Whoa.
With the animals. So it's really fun. They'll be coming up on the Facebook, but I can say I've been coast to coast now.
Are you going to be on the Tonight Show? Are you the next Jennifer Lawrence?
Ooh.
Oh, you know what? That Tonight Show, Glenn, we've already had animals on there.
Oh, really?
We've been on Jimmy Kimmel, the Tonight Show. Yeah, all that. We've already had... Those are small things.
I got to tell you, though,
things.
We at the Horse Radio Network have the ability to say that one of our hosts, Wendy Ying, Dr. Wendy, actually has been between Jennifer Lawrence's legs. And we're really very few that can say that. She has, because she drove the chariot in the... remember the scene in Hunger Games with the chariots?
Oh, yeah.
It was Wendy that was between her legs on the floor driving the horses.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Oh, my
goodness. And she had no idea who Jennifer Lawrence was at that point. She just thought she was this bratty kid. And
she'd only been in Winter's Bone, which she was nominated for the Oscar, but not. She was a mainstream star at that time.
Right, right, exactly. She said she was very nice, though. She said Jennifer was one of the nicer ones. She said that a lot of those kids were bratty. But, so and they had to reshoot that scene. So she was actually crouched down on the floor of the chariot with a blanket over top of her, and the reins came out the bottom of the chariot to the, I think it was pairs of Frisians during that scene, to the pair of Frisians, and then they CGI'd the reins out later. So that's how they did that scene.
Magic of Hollywood. Yeah. This is the cool stuff to hear, is how all this
can
stuff
you,
is done.
Well, you can talk about some of the cool past stuff you've done.
Yeah.
So tell us. Mary loves this stuff, so. I do, too.
Yeah, well, I'm so impressed, because in the industry, it's all freelance. It's really, you know, you get in. A lot of people typically do their job, and they leave. What we found, I work for one of the major guys in L.A., and, you know, now he's in Georgia. And, you know, I'm actually an animal consultant. I do a lot of coordinating. And so now I'm hiring people to do these jobs, and it feels like the worst Craigslist ads. I mean, I hire these people, they say, oh yeah, I can do that. And it's the guy that, you know, he knows how to ride. I've been riding forever, that whole thing.
Especially,
you know,
in East Texas.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So it's been very interesting to see, and I truly, there's different ways to work with animals, and I think part of the success is just letting them do what they do, and that's their talent. A zebra is a zebra, and if you hire a zebra to be a zebra, you won't fail. It's always going to be a zebra, but if we hire a zebra to, you know, back up and spin and wear a tutu, it's probably not going to happen, so we're probably going to disappoint the client. So these are things you have to learn while you're going through the, you know, the various jobs and things like that, is the disappointment factor. You
it's
never
when
to want
paint
to
stripes on the Shetland pony.
Yeah, that's right. The day, Dominic, the day we were out at Norco to visit you, there was a photo shoot going on. I think it was for a commercial or something, where the zebras, they wanted a shot of the zebras running, which took all freaking day, and they probably used 2 seconds of it.
Yeah.
But they actually asked Dominic to see, and I don't even know how they knew what this was, but to see if they could get the zebras to change their lead when they were running by. It's like, what?
But in the mind, okay, so here's what we do, is they want, that was for a Parliament cigarette ad, and they had to be cantering, loping on the left lead. So here's what we do. It sounds extremely complicated. Get a zebra to canter on the left lead, but all we do is we work with the mentality of the animal. So let's bend the zebras on a slow curve going to the left, and we start them right before their end point is where we start. And we ask them to increase their speed. They're going on a straightaway, kind of like an arena. And then they're traveling left. So then when they come around that corner for the shot, they're already on the left lead. So you have to be diligent enough to work with the mentality of what you're working with. I think that's a major key.
What? Right there that you said is the secret of horsemanship, and so many people don't get it. It's all about us saying, I want you on the left lead, and by golly, you're going to get it. And when you start butting heads, even with something as sweet as a quarter horse, it's not going to work. And I've had old timey horsemen that say, okay, well, to get the horse to pick up the left lead for the first time, I just turn him toward the barn and their body is angled right. And then I ask. And as an egotistical human, I think, well, he shouldn't be running to the barn. He should be wanting to stay here and please me. And it's when you train horses, it's ask the question, you know what the answer is already going to be. And when you do that several times and you can continue to get the correct answer from the horse because you're asking at the right time, then you can ask it anywhere you want and that you know the answer will be correct. And people, that's a good thing to listen to. People don't understand how that works. And so I think that's a good little piece of advice.
You make the easy things easy and the hard things impossible. Don't ever get in a situation where you have to fight. Don't fight. Let's just be friends. Let's make the easy things easy. Make the hard. Don't even have the hard things come in your mind. And I was so impressed, Mary. I saw, you know, I will tell you, there's a lot of followers on my Facebook. I look at a lot of stuff. You see, I don't know the terminology of a podcast. I don't know. I post things and I see likes and it makes me happy. And I see a lot of people. They send me a lot of videos of their animals and their dogs, you know, wanting them to be in the industry, kind of doing something. And I was so impressed by your video that I commented on, because it was phenomenal. If I could
If I could get she posts
five
a lot.
People, it was one where there was a bay horse going to a mark, and it was just, and it wasn't even going to a mark. It was the finesse and the willing. The horse was such a willing partner. And when I talk about horses and humans, I don't mean to talk. It gets really confusing because I'll talk about the person as the partner. You're on the same plane as the animal, I feel. And so I was just really, really intrigued by the serendipity of both of you working together as a team and the communication that was silent. And I think a lot of people miss that little ear twitch or, you know, the little head cock or, you know, these little steps that you really have to look for and know when to put the pressure on and know when to take it off. And in the industry, going to a mark freely and doing your job willingly is just, that's just giant to me. And I don't have three people in my Rolodex or contacts that I could contact that would work that well with an animal. And so the next time I'm getting horses on set, you're coming.
Oh, so, yes. That's my dream come true. I didn't even realize I was accidentally making an audition video.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I look at these all the time. I see people, like I said, I see 5 to 10 a day. People post them on my wall. I delete most of them before 10 a.m. But going to a mark is huge. And, you know, there's this clicker training, which can be great if used correctly. But I see a lot of, it looks like people are doing the tango or salsa dancing with these little clicker buttons.
Yeah,
it's just to see what you've done is really, really, really good. I've dealt with a lot of clinicians that are up and coming that try and they're doing great because I truly believe anybody that's willing to get out there and be a positive influence in the equine industry is winning half the battle. But to see that you're actually doing it and it's actually working and you're doing a great job, that's a whole different thing. I mean, I could have used you 100 times by now. And I will use you. It's just the finesse of what you're doing is it's really, really, really good. And I could not believe you hadn't trained with anybody in the industry before. Cause if you were to write a textbook about what we need, you did it. I mean, it was spot on and it was accurate and it was better than some of the guys that I've worked with that are major players that, you know, have animals in the film industry.
Hey, Dominic,
so I applaud
Dominic,
you on that
one. You better stop because she's going to ask for a raise next.
I know.
She's going to want more money and then I'm going to...
I didn't have an ego before. Well, you know, and it's really cool and informative to hear. I love hearing that something that I, you know, just that was just kind of messing with my horse.
Which horse was it, by the way?
Oh, it was Guthrie.
It was Guthrie? Okay. Uh-oh. What do you got going on there, Dominic?
Chili. Be quiet.
Oh. Like
are you okay?
That was Miss Chili Beans. You met her a while ago, but that's Miss Chili. She was saying hello.
I thought it was Glenn playing with the sound effects.
It wasn't me.
I've been distracted by that all morning.
That's funny.
Yeah, Glenn didn't really want to hear what you had to say there.
Way to rain on my parade. Yeah.
We love when we hear Winnie's, or in this case, Chili, on the air.
Oh, my gosh.
That's fun.
Little Chili Bean had to say something. You're famous. She's like, okay, please, food lady.
All right, well, we're going to have to wrap up here, Dominique, but I have a question for you, and Mary, we'll let your head we'll let your head shrink back to normal now. And that was Guthrie, that's her famous horse, and we're going to talk more about Guthrie here in a minute. But I do have to ask you, I've been asking Mary this now since I've known her, actually, and she's never given me an answer, and I know you're never going to give me one either. So I asked Mary exactly how many animals she does own, and all she will tell me is there's too many to count. Are you still in that too many to count category?
Well, I don't know. Depends on who I'm looking at when you ask. Currently, right now, as I stand today, it's going to probably change in an hour because I'm waiting for a very good call about some rescue horses. I've got, here in Texas, 30 zebras, two horses, a freaking stallion, a quarter horse mare, a very precious donkey. And let me turn around and see what I've got over here. We've got two llamas, another zebra, and I've got some pigs, baby zebras, you know. I don't know. Did you count?
I think that's everybody was going. All the husbands out there are going, damn, I'd hate to feed all that.
30 zebras.
Yeah, I don't know. Enough to feed.
Do you have
plenty to feed?
Do you have trouble? I have another question. We could talk to you all day. You need your own show. Do you have trouble finding vets to work on the exotics? Because, you know, most zebras are not, a lot of times, they're not easy to work with. Do you have specific vets? Has that been a problem when you moved?
You know, I fortunately was able to work for a vet in my younger years, for a wonderful vet in Southern California that was just phenomenal. And he taught me a lot. So thank God I'm knocking on wood right now. I haven't had any major issues, and the zebras getting health certs and Coggins, that was not a big deal. There is a good vet I've found in the city that we're in. So, you know, that's pretty good. And I'll tell you, zebras are pretty hardy. They don't really need vet care. They don't need certain things like a horse does. I mean, people that I know that have a lot of horses are turning around every month and they have a vet bill, and so the zebras really don't. They're pretty easy that way.
Well, we appreciate you being on, and I hope you two can get together. You really do need to get together. You have so much in common. And thank you for coming on again. It's zebrasareus.com. Zebrasareus.com. And can we put the disclaimer in here that we always do and that we kind of talk to you about? Zebras are still wild animals. If you're looking at buying a zebra just for jollies, what would you tell people?
Call me.
Yeah.
No, they're definitely not. If any trainers call me, I immediately dump that note in the trash. But they're wonderful animals if put in the right position. And as a client, anybody looking into it, we definitely go over all of that. You have an application to fill out. And I'll actually, this is a short little story. And I'm not going to name any names, but two of the biggest celebrity couples have decided to bring zebras and donkeys into their life. And I actually got contacted by one, you know, their assistant, and they said, well, we can't give you all this personal information and we can't put it on paper and release it. I said, well, then you're not going to get an animal. And they said, but you know who we are. This is for blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, but blah, blah, blah lives a life just like I do. And blah, blah, blah needs to feed their animal. And I need to know that my animal is going to be fed. And so it's a huge process to get one from us. And no matter who you are or what you do, not enough money in the world can buy one to give it a bad home. So we definitely make sure of where they're going, your goals and intent, and then try to help you and make sure that it is the right animal that you're looking into.
Yeah, I think some people have the fantasy, and, you know, a lot of times fantasy turns out to be better than reality. So I like the fact that you actually work with them ahead of time to figure out that the fantasy and reality are one and the same. I do like that because they, you know, they're still wild animals and they're still different than horses. So,
absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. And you cannot do the things you can do with a horse and a donkey are maybe 1% you could do with a zebra. And if you go into it wanting to train it, ride it, and do stuff, you're probably going to fail. You know, there's 1 out of 100 that are that great. And so if you go into it with the intent that you have a beautiful property, you want to sit by your, you know, sit on your porch and look out in your 200-acre pasture and have a few zebras roaming and just love them and look at them and observe their beauty, that's a great home for a zebra. No pressure.
But if you expect them to come up on the porch and visit you and be hugged on, probably not going to happen with most of them.
And that's exactly right. And so we try to really, really tell people what you're getting into, and we want people to come out and see our herd and what they do and if that animal would make them satisfied, because the last thing we want is for our zebras to be rehomed. So we try to make it a last-stop shop. I make sure that I'm like the foster mom and I give them a good foundation, and the next place they go, that's it. They don't ever have to get on a trailer again. So
you know, one of the regular guests on our show too, a neighbor of yours there in Texas is Sammy Joe, and everybody listening knows Sammy Joe, and she makes it look easy to do what she does with her zebras, but she's one in a thousand. That's not the normal.
Absolutely. And she's done a phenomenal job. She's really somebody to look up to as far as working with them.
Yeah, but she's one in a million in this world. I mean, and you know, she has the experience and the training to handle that. So thank you, zebrasareus.com. If you want a stripe thing out in the back pasture and want something pretty to look at and fun to have, we really appreciate you being on again. And we'll talk to you soon. And good luck at the movies.
All righty. Thanks, Glenn.
Jennifer.
Everybody over there.
Jennifer, too. Jennifer Lawrence, too.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
And then she'll never talk to us again. You know that. She's going to become famous. We'll call her and she'll say, her people will say, she can't talk to you right now. She's too busy.
How did you get this number?
Yeah. How did you get this number? You shouldn't have this number.
Yeah.
This isn't listed.
Bye, Dominique.
Bye. Have a good day.
Bye.
Well, it's so much fun having her on. Every time she comes on, it's a treat. We do like having her. I learn so much from her every time, too.
I know. Yeah, there was a lot of good information there. Yeah, we'll have to have her back on again.
Does it make you want to get a zebra? You have a Z-donk, but does it make you want to get a zebra?
I would like a zebra at one point, but it would be, you know, I've got so many, it'd be a matter of dedicating time and, making sure I had the right spot for it. But Z-Donk will suffice for now. She's pretty cool and different, and I love her.
Well, let's hear from our title sponsor today. And then I have a song for you, and we're come up to our next guest. And I thought, well, after hearing about you guys and all of your animals and you with your animals in the car, you just are a nightmare for horse husbands, the two of you. So I thought I'd play a little song called Rescue Husband Blues right after we hear from our sponsor.
In the world of horse racing and elite equestrian sports, it's all about how to prepare and repair. Ice5 is a truly portable and highly efficient circulation therapy system for your horse. Before activity, prepare to prevent damage by using the Ice5's vibration pads. Repair after the event by using the unique combination of cold packs and vibration to minimize swelling and encourage blood flow. And because it's battery powered, Ice5 is truly portable. The essential and affordable tool to prepare and repair. Ice5.
You can find out more details about Ice Vibe at ice-vibe.com or horseware.com, or ask your local tack shop or online supplier for more information about Ice Vibe circulation therapy from Horseware.
Well, I knew I was in trouble when my wife saw this old horse. He's a pathetic thing, and she said, we've just got to take him home. Know that we can feed him up and get him back on his feet. Next thing I know, there's 14 more in my wife's rescue elite. Suddenly, she's getting 15,000 emails a day. Most of them from people trying to send another horse our way. A few times I tried to put the brakes on, but it was just too late. She'd hypnotized 14 other wives all across the state. Well, I guess there's worse obsessions that my darling wife could choose. But that sure don't stop me from having the rescue husband blues. We fostered 1,000 horses, most whose names I can't recall. But at least I know a little piece of my wallet went out with them all. Now my wife loves the horses, and I've just had to accept that. Having a little more trouble with these 40 dogs and cats. Everything was fine until they commandeered my chair. Covered every piece of clothing I own with piles and mounds of hair. Next thing you know, I'm gonna be renting another house. Cause the animals will unionize and quickly vote me out. I'd like to think my wife will side with me when that day comes. But I don't know, she's got little use for creatures with opposable thumbs. I guess there's worse obsessions that my darling wife could choose. That sure don't stop me from having the rescue husband blues. We fostered 1,000 horses, most whose names I can't recall. But at least I know a little piece of my wallet went out with them all. Now I know some of you fellas out there can surely sympathize. Same thing's been going on at your house and with your darling wives. So let's start us up a club. Let the meeting start. Cause there's a whole lot of Shinerbach beer in misery. Come on and do your part. We've got the rescue husband blues. Sure don't got no money left to lose. Let's get together and talk about the days before our wives are rescue slaves and drink away these old rescue husband blues. Just can't shake these rescue husband blues.
Well, that's the Rescue Husband Blues by Spencer Williams. Boy, that's a story of most horse husbands' lives right there. Spencer Williams can be found on Reverb Nation or iTunes, any one of those places. He has other great songs like Rescue Husband Blues in there as well. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I'm Glenda Geek here, and I am with Mary Kitzmiller today. It's a Mary Kitzmiller episode, having fun with our friends. And right now, we're going to switch gears a little bit away from exotic wild animals and zebras and Z-donks and all of that, and we're going to go into talking a little bit about horses' feet. And for that, we're going to get on. Well, why don't you introduce him while I get him on the line here?
We've got barefoot practitioner David Landerville, and I want to double check on the pronunciation of that name.
All right, and I have to call him live here in the air because we have a
sounds
technical
just
issue
like
today.
Car radio.
It does. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he's out of Texas, I assume.
Hello.
Hello, David. It's Glenn and Mary with Horses in the Morning, and you're on the air.
Hi, Glenn and Mary.
It's good to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure. Thank you.
All right, Mary, take it away.
Okay. You and I have had a few phone conversations, and actually, David is out of Tucson, Arizona, I believe. And
Tucson.
Yep. So, he's coming all the way from Tucson. He'll be here at the end of the month working on a few horses. One of them would be the horse we were just talking about, which is my horse, Guthrie. And
let's remind everybody, Guthrie was your road to the horse, your first road to the horse.
Yes, okay. He's my big, fat bay horse who's very lovely.
Which everybody fell in love with. Everybody knows Guthrie.
Yes. He's a special boy. But I've been having some feet issues with him. I'm going to try actually pulling his shoes and going into barefoot trimming, which is what you do. Now, the first question I'd like to ask is, there's trimming a horse who doesn't wear shoes. And then there's kind of this whole, I guess I would call it a movement of a trimming a horse to go barefoot and be healthy and sound barefoot. What are some things that kind of sets that that apart, what you do apart from typical just trimming horses?
The main thing that The main difference would be in the soft tissue development, the lateral cartilages and the digital cushion. And it's not just like a maintenance trim, like a 4 to 6 week trim, and you got the same thing every time you show up. It's more of a trim to where you get the physiologically correct shape of the foot to match the horse's conformation, and you get the weight bearing properly over the structures that are supposed to support the weight. And when you keep that constant, the inside of the foot develops, and that will continue to develop as long as the horse is standing. So that's the main difference, is developing a foot rather than trimming a foot.
And that's something I've kind of learned. You know, I've had some idea over of it over the years. I worked at a place where Pete Ramey often came and taught and did some trims, who's also a barefoot practitioner. But it wasn't until I started having difficulty with my horse Guthrie that I really understood what was going on. Because as you probably know and can probably tell us, the foot may look pretty on the outside, may look balanced, but that doesn't mean that everything is going right in the horse inside and out. And this is the issue with Guthrie, is his feet tend to naturally, I don't know if this is natural, but at the moment his feet stretch forward, his heels kind of go under run, and therefore he's not really putting his weight, it's not really supporting his weight correctly, which has actually affected the way he moves. So you're saying it's not just I'm going to call my farrier up every 6, sometimes even 8 weeks, and then we're going to cut some foot off, and that's going to be that. It's actually trying to keep the foot maintained throughout. So do you subscribe to the concept? Are you, when you trim a horse, are you trying to mimic the foot of a wild horse? Does that have any say in how you look at a horse?
Yes, it does. It's not what I'm trying to do. Per se, it's more taking the knowledge from the people who have done the research on wild horses' feet, and using that information to build a horse's a domestic horse's foot. There's a lot of people that think that you can't do that, or that can't be done. The domestic feet are different than wild feet, but they're not really. The only thing that's different is probably the lack of development that domestic horses' feet have in the first few years of their life. But if you can tap into the natural shape of the horse's foot, then you can start fixing a lot of problems, and you can improve that development. So it's more of a it's more of a model that that I apply, that it can be applied to a domestic horse's foot, but it's not anything that's forced. It's more encouraged, and it takes a lot of time. We're talking, you know, years to develop the shape, and not in one trim or two trims or a few months. It's a gradual process that that you encourage on feet.
Well, and I
but
think
it is, based on wild horses' feet.
And, you know, and I think that can be a misconception for people that are just learning about it, is you're not going to take a wild horse hoof model and then on your domestic horse just carve on that foot until it looks like the picture.
Right.
Which that would probably not be a good idea.
No, it'd be a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But that is what a lot of people think that's what a lot of people think that's happening with using the wild horse as a model, and it's not at all. The horse has to develop it themselves, and the trimmer and the owner just try to set up a successful environment and situation for that to happen.
Well, and there's you know, I've looked at models over the years, pictures of feet out in the wild. It's different. I was actually surprised when I started adopting Mustangs that their feet didn't look like the models I had looked at, but they are in a different environment. But when they're out in the wild and you look at their feet, it's amazing to see not only how hard and callous the foot is, and it's a slick, black, shiny sole, but there's really not much foot there, not like you would see on a domestic horse. It almost it almost appears like they don't even have a heel at all, and that the hairline of their bulbs is almost touching the ground. So, you know, given that we're not obviously going to try to copy that, do you see domestic horses that you've trimmed after a while start to look more and more like that, or will there always be some difference there?
The experience that I have with trimming this way is that you can take, I've been able to take about any foot, no matter the breed, no matter the age, and somewhat no matter the damage. There are some horses that have been, the foot's too far gone to really get anywhere. I've still been able to make improvements, but not get to a point where it's a, you know, like a super foot. But it'd be better than what they had to begin with. So yes, I've been able there's a limit to development, and depending on how long the horse is, it's a lot better to start with a younger horse. You're going to get a lot more development, but I've seen some horses in their late 20s. And by the time they're 30, have a beautiful functional foot that they can be put back to, have a job again. So that's
given
kind of
that,
how it goes.
And I've heard that a lot, you know, especially, reading and talking with Pete Ramey and others. I've seen a lot of really amazing before and after cases, horses that, you know, either suffered from neglect, or they had laminitis or navicular. And in some cases, even horses that, you know, someone thought this is as far as this horse is going to get health wise. They were able to get turned around and at least have a great deal of pain and discomfort alleviated by a proper trim. Are there instances where you would say, oh, I think a shoe would help this horse along, or do you have, or is there a time when you think, okay, this horse right here cannot go barefoot? Do you ever have any moments like that?
I've personally not applied a shoe in probably 10 or 11 years. I started going barefoot 12 years ago, and there were a few instances, mostly because, for instance, one person that I pulled shoes for and started the barefoot process entered a show, and she needed, and then they wouldn't allow boots in the show, and she needed shoes put on. And so I didn't know that before we went barefoot. So I made an exception, and I put shoes on that horse for the weekend and took them off the following week. But there wasn't, there might have been one other case in that time where I had a reason to put a shoe on, but it wasn't for the benefit of the horse. It was for something that was just, you know, a temporary get through the weekend kind of thing. So yeah, there's not, in my own experience, I don't have any reason for steel shoes. They have too many composite rubber materials that they make shoes out of now, and it's steel is just not anything. If someone came up with steel today, everybody would think they were crazy. But because we've been using it for a couple thousand years, everybody thinks it's okay. So not everybody, but some people think it's okay.
Yeah, that is kind of the status quo, and I heard a kind of apt quote the other day, and I want to see if I can get this right. Something like the saying, well, that's the way we've always done it, is the most dangerous phrase in the human language. And I think a lot of things in the horse industry are that way. Oh, well, that's just how it's done.
Yeah. As Joe Camp summed it up in his book, The Soul of the Horse, where he never accepted that answer. That's the way we've always done it. And I think he put it really good, made a good statement in that book.
You know, and the practitioners that I've talked to over the years, you know, we were talking about the feet and how you trim the feet and you want to get it to do certain things. But also what I see a lot of stress on is you can't just trim the feet and have that be the only part of the equation. There's other things that come into play, how you adjust the horse's environment and their diet. And so do you have any kind of good places to start as far as how can I make my, like with Guthrie, for instance, my quarter horse, when we start doing this kind of trimming on him, what kind of things should I do to his environment and his diet that might help his foot health?
The thing that I always start with is footing. Footing is the first thing that, say you take a horse that's in a stall, and a stall isn't a good place for a horse because they can't move, and horses need to move. And that's how you build the foot, is through movement, through correct movement. The trim is just to set the horse up for proper movement. The movement forges the foot and develops the foot. It's the weight over the shape of the foot that actually develops the foot. So footing is the first place that I always recommend people start, is 3 to 4 inches of stone particulate, like a small stone particulate footing, like sand or chat or pea gravel. It's called different things in different places, but I think pea gravel and sand is pretty typical. Chat is a material that's just in between, and that not only provides self-leveling for the horse, it also improves their blood flow into their feet. So you're building the foot from the inside out when you board on sand, chat, or pea gravel. Anyway, the reason I like chat, the in-between size, is because pea gravel can be too overstimulating, and then people have the horse and the person, the owner, have a bad experience with it. But if you start with a smaller material, it's not as much of a shock. The next thing is movement. You know, get your horse out of the stall. Get them on a pasture. Get them on build a track system. Do something to get them moving. The diet is another thing. They can't eat a lot of sugary, starchy food and expect to develop a healthy foot. Some horses can get away with it if they work hard, I think. But I always try to stay strictly grass with horses and maybe a few supplements, but not much. My own horses have been on grass hay for 12 years. The other thing is a consistent, if you don't have enough space for that horse to develop and trim his own foot, you've got to do something in between. And it takes a lot of space for a horse, thousands of acres for a horse to develop and trim his own foot.
You're looking at the Mustang, you're looking at that as a model, as a reference point. Not only are they not eating 6 pounds of grain a day in alfalfa, right, but they're moving, 40 to 50 miles a day over.
It depends on the area, but I've heard anywhere from 12 to 30 miles a day in the studies that I've read. And no matter what, it's way more than most domestic horses are getting. And in a lot of cases, it's varied terrain. It can be kind of a harsh terrain. But I see horses that are in just a small half acre track system that have other horses that are in a little herd setting. Maybe there's at least two horses in one track system moving on sand and hard ground, and that's enough movement to get them to start wearing and developing their own foot. So the trimmer doesn't have to do all of it, and the horse is creating his own foot. That's the trick, is you're really trying to get the horse to create his own foot. The trimmer is a big part of it.
And when you say track system, for those that don't know, from what I've read, it's a way that you can set up. It literally is a system of tracks. And I've seen them where they're pretty varied. They almost look like a labyrinth. And when you have that kind of narrow space, your horse is sort of compelled to move through it instead of just a 1 acre pasture where they're just sitting in the same spot. And I've seen a lot of folks, they'll, instead of just dumping all the hay in the morning in one spot, spread it through the system. So the horse is constantly moving yeah, that's kind of a nifty setup.
I've seen those have become popular recently, and it's almost like a maze right in your horse's field. But it has to be done right.
It can be anything.
Yeah, it has to be done right too. I read some nightmare stories about people who thought they'd do it themselves without any help. And, yeah. You know, your horses can get in trouble in those too. So it's something yeah. that has to be done right. The corridors have to be wide enough, and you really do need space. It's not something you're right. going to do in 1 acre in Norco, California. You know, it's
you, here's the thing though. You actually can do a 60 foot round pen with a concentric circle on the outside of that. That's say, let's see, 75. So a 75 foot round pen on the outside of that, and put the horses in the donut part of it. And then you've got you can even leave the round pen open. That can be your sandy area, and the outside can be your you know more firm area. And then you spread hay all around the edges of that. And you can make a couple of wide spots on the outside. It doesn't have to be a circle inside a circle. But I've had people make track systems where they join two stalls, cut out the middle part, and then put a divider in the middle, where there was an opening on either end, where they had, you know, I had one customer in particular that had two horses side by side in stalls. And I asked her if she could talk to the barn manager and get that, the partition, modified so that, and she did. And we got improvement out of that within a short amount of time. We got, but those horses were moving each other around that was a little track system, the smallest one I've ever seen, but it created improvement. So
because movement is better than no movement.
Exactly. Right, every extra footstep you can get is closer to a better foot.
Well, David, we have to wrap here because we're just running out of time. Where can people find you, and where do you travel to? What's the story on your business?
Before I tell you that, I wanted to give Jamie Jackson credit for that, because I said track system, but the Paddock Paradise is where that originated. So I'm on Facebook. I've got a page called On the Vertical, and I'm on just Facebook as David Landreville. It's Landreville. I've also got a website that's Landreville Hoof Care. It's a little old, but I haven't added anything to that in years, but some people still find me that way.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you being on. Thank you so much for stopping by, and good luck with Mary's Guthrie. Remember, he's famous, so don't screw it up.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Did I put the fear of God into him, Mary?
Yeah, I think that was adequate. Yes.
I'm just helping you out. Just your price just doubled, by the way.
Yes, it probably did.
You can thank me for that later.
Yeah.
Well, if you want more Mary Kitzmiller, you can get more Mary Kitzmiller by buying her DVDs. Tell them what you have DVDs on.
Well, we discussed the laydown one earlier, and again, that's a no ropes laydown you can shape with positive reinforcement. I have an intro to positive reinforcement. I've got a colt starting DVD series, which is a little bit more of your traditional horsemanship, and that's where I take a filly and prepare her for the first ride, very groundwork heavy. So not just for colts, you can use it for anything. And then I promise I'm going to get this out soon. I've been working on it. I've got an online video series coming out, so you can get shorter videos and watch them right online on any device. You'll be able to find all of that on my website at marykitzmiller.com.
Very good. And you were talking about Whole Foods earlier, and we wanted to mention, give a plug out for the Healthy Critters radio show that is done here and is sponsored by BioStar, the Whole Foods supplement company. But they talk a lot about Whole Foods, not just for your horses, but for your dogs and your cats and your chickens. And you can find that at HealthyCrittersRadio.com or at Horse Radio Network or on our app. It's all of those places. And it's become a very popular show very quickly. So I just wanted to give that a plug as well. If you want more Mary, too, you can stop by Stable Scoop coming out later today. This Stable Scoop episode, Mary filled in for Helena, who's like basking in the sun in some tropical island someplace, drinking martinis and fruity drinks. So we appreciate you helping out there. And, you know, we have another great listener. on that show as well. Tomorrow's Really Bad Ads Day. Get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. It's going to be the last Really Bad Ads for 2 weeks because next Friday we have off. I'll be doing I have to go do a talk at the American Horse Publications at conference. So Ooh. Jamie and I will be off next Friday, which means you have to get your ads in for tomorrow so we can read them on the air. And you know what? I hate to tell you this, Mary, but boy, Texas is a plethora of really bad ads on Craigslist. You guys have the best really bad ads in Texas.
I posted one. I wouldn't even call it a really bad ad, just very interesting. I posted it in the audio group and I was actually kind of awesome. This gal doesn't care. She's riding barefoot in her shorts, carrying an American flag on an Appaloosa.
I saw that.
And the song makes the video because I can't remember the title of the song, but it's all about this guy singing about his baby and she chews skull. And I'm like, this is the most Texas ad ever. And I wanted that horse at the end of it. So it was effective.
It was funny, actually. Thank you, Mary. We appreciate you being here. We'll see you all tomorrow on Horses in the Morning, 9 a.m. Eastern.